Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit SurreyFarms.com. You are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Good morning. You're listening to In the Drink on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Joe Campanelli, and I'm very excited to be here today with Eamon Rocky. Eamon's the GM of a restaurant that's not quite open yet called Bethany, but he has worked in some of just the best restaurants here in New York City, including 11 Madison Park, Atera, Asuka. He actually ran Atera as the general manager and Asuka as well. So someone who has quite a lot of cred here in the city. He's been in the industry since he was just a kid, and just really excited to have you on the show, Eamon.
Excited to be here.
You're kind of a pro here at Heritage Radio Network. I didn't realize when I asked you, this is your third time here at the radio station. So thanks for coming back.
My pleasure. I think there's a little plaque of me on the back of this chair.
Yeah, I think one more and you get a little name card next to the boar head over there. So tell us about your new project.
Sure. Bethany's going to be a Manhattan project on 57th Street between 5th and 6th. It's my first time in that neighborhood in a long time. It's a collaboration between myself and Bryce Schumann, the chef. He's coming off of a number of years at 11 Madison Park, where we met, a really inspirational character and someone who I'm incredibly excited to work with. The project is all about people and all about doing something special for New York, you know, and we have a lot of things that we're really excited about there. But, you know, as we move closer and closer to the opening date, it'll be this spring, we're both continually referencing how amazing the folks are that are gravitating toward the project. And the wine director, Luke Wohlers, who I also worked with a number of years ago at EMP, is flying out from Seattle relatively soon to take his position as the wine director of the restaurant. And I couldn't be more excited about that. The sommeliers on the team, on his team at Bethany is just coming together beautifully. And, you know, from bottom to top, you know, it's some really standout individuals that are going to do some cool things with us, I hope.
Well, that's super exciting. When is the cuisine going to be in that kind of Scandinavian cuisine that you have come to be known to be an expert in?
I wouldn't call myself an expert in any cuisine, but you know, the cuisine is the food that Bryce loves. And it's funny when anybody, you know, starts talking to Bryce about the project, you know, the question inevitably comes up, you know, what's the food going to be? What kind of food are you going to make? And, you know, his responses range from, you know, Hunan food to meatballs to whatever else, you know, because it's got to come from the heart. You know, if there's one thing I can say about him is that he's an incredibly conscientious chef and one who cares about the people and the way that the food makes them feel. He's got to love the food. You know, I continually hear him say that, you know, I've got to love it. I've tasted, you know, through the menu a couple times in its different evolutionary states, and it's really, really delicious stuff. So I hope that people dig it.
All right. What can you tell us about the beverage program?
Sure. It won't have anything to do with me. So, as I say, you know, I'm doing my best to bring people onto the team, and I think, yeah, I'm blessed thus far to see some incredibly talented folks gravitate toward the project. And the cocktail program is going to be really strong and initially relatively sparse or relatively focused, I should say. As I say, you know, we're moving into a new neighborhood as a team, and I want to get to know it. I want to grow into it, and I want to see what folks in that you know, strange place in the world that we call Midtown, as you know, downtowners and whatnot, really, really looking for, and what we can do to make them happy.
with the cocktails, is there anything that the program will draw inspiration from?
You know, that's a good question. As I said with Bryce, with regard to food, I feel really strongly that, you know, it's important that the beverage program and service program as a whole are reflections of things that I hold to be important. So, you know, really pure flavors, really, really strong ingredient focus, freshness, and you know, innovation where appropriate, but always as a means to an end as opposed to a showcase for the technique itself. So without giving away or talking about too much, especially since, you know, some of it is still, you know, in form, it's going to be an honest and pure approach to beverage as a whole.
Mm-hmm. And the wine list, new world, old world, a mix?
Certainly a mix, but I look forward to seeing where Luke takes it. It'll be an extensive enough list off the bat that we're able to satisfy the diverse array of a highly sophisticated clientele and also just a clientele that's looking for delicious things. But you know, it'll grow into have focus, I'm sure.
Okay, and tell us a little bit about why you chose this neighborhood. There's not a ton going on. I know there's the Menkoute ramen shop. Mm-hmm. We spoke the other day. And it was like, are you going to Menkoute all the time? And you're like, yeah, that's my lunch spot. I love that place.
Joe Shanghai, absolutely.
And Joe Shanghai, which I didn't even realize there was one up there. I've been to the one down in Chinatown.
Mokesh is on that block. It's an amazing block for food. It really is.
Wow. And well, why do you think that is? What's going on? It historically has not been amazing.
Sure, and that's why I said strange a minute ago, because I think that, you know, Midtown is a misunderstood neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Initially, for me, whenever we started talking about this project, you know, my ignorance initially led me to uncertainty. But the more time I spend in this neighborhood, the more I fall in love with it. You know, being so close to the park, the buildings there are gorgeous. There's so many different people in the area for so many different reasons, and the diversity of different kinds of food, the museums and whatnot are really all amazing. The mm-hmm. sidewalk installations of artists and just, you know, being in that bustling neighborhood that changes so greatly from hour to hour on different days is really, really cool. And it's something that I'm disappointed with myself that I haven't gotten to know earlier.
Right. I guess you're far enough north in Midtown where you have some people who will visit who actually live close by. Mm. And then certainly a lot of people work over there and tourists as well. So it's probably a nice combination of the three.
Yeah, it's an amazing cross-section of New Yorkers and those visiting New York. I really like it a lot.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. So tell us a little bit about where you are in the opening process right now. What have you done? What is there left to do?
Sure. Well, you know, the paper's up in the windows for a reason.
Yeah, okay, so it's close. Because they don't put the papers up if there's nothing on the walls, right?
Well, you know, we're in process. Okay. I hesitate to give too much of a definite, you know, date on things, because I want to make sure that when we make a promise, we stick to it. Mm-hmm. You know, and how many restaurants have you opened? How many restaurants have you seen open? And I've certainly been involved in a couple that you know make really strong commitments, either internally or openly. And it becomes difficult to bite the bullet and say, you know what, we need another week or whatever it may be. I want to be able to, you know, make that announcement to the city and stick to it and keep my promise.
Okay. I guess we're not making that announcement today on the show, but I want to hear about it when it does happen. What have you learned from previous openings that you're going to use in this one?
Sure. Well, it's crazy. This is the fourth opening in 3 years for me. With a lot of the same people in each one, you know, people continually are like, wow, man, you're going from one thing to the next. And it's true in some ways, but, you know, the first one, the awesome cocktail lounge that I miss greatly composed, evolved mm-hmm. into a Terra, you know, and that in and of itself was a unique experience, growing one business into another. And Aska, which was an amazing and is still an amazing, as a Terra is, project that I look forward to returning to as often as possible, was a totally different direction. And in each of these openings has really sort of been a very different dynamic amongst the people involved, and different emphasis is on different things. You know, at Atera, it was about sort of fun amidst a hushed glorification of food. You know, centered around the kitchen and looking to the kitchen to be the central focus. At Asuka, you know, it's as much about the food as it is anything else, but it's also about the space and about taking it in and being a part of the neighborhood. You know, Atera is almost an escape. It's you know, the windows are frosted and there's plants all over the place, and it's intended to sweep New Yorkers to a different place. And I think we accomplished that whenever we designed it. Asuka was about, you know, bringing the neighborhood into the space and also, you know, pouring the restaurant out of the space. And you know, different restaurants have taught me different things in that way. Bethany, anybody who walks the street, you know, will see the windows that we have. And I love the fact that we have so much window space right on 57th Street. And I hope that we're able to showcase, you know, the restaurant and the bar, but also take in a little bit of the Manhattan, you know, cityscape.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, maybe this isn't as sexy as some of the design stuff you're talking about, but operationally, mm-hmm. what have you learned? I know for us, when we opened up Del Anima, we're a long ways away from our first opening, and everyone has gotten much, much easier. Not that it's ever an easy thing, because there's so many, you know, there's so many moving parts. It's amazing that they all come together. Mm-hmm. But in terms of operationally speaking, mm-hmm. what have you learned from the openings that you're going to use that's going to make this one even smoother than the first one you did 3 years ago?
Investment in people by far is, mm-hmm. is the most important lesson that I've learned over the course of the last, you know, 3 to 4 years as I've gotten the chance to open a few things with some really cool people. When I came off at 11 Madison Park, you know, I was there for 3 years and I was there as a captain and a bartender and learned a tremendous amount from a number of really inspiring people. And leaving that family and opening up even a small project and not realizing that I needed to establish my own culture of restaurant and of a team was a really hard lesson to learn. You can't do everything yourself. You can't command respect from people right off the bat. And I didn't realize that at first because I'd never known what it was like to open a place and to have to build a culture. You know, 11 Madison Park had a culture. I was a part of that culture. But, you know, you can't transfer that. You have to foster it. And so I met with a great deal of frustration and you know, I was pulling my hair out and trying to figure out what I was doing wrong. And over the course of the last few years, it's become very clear to me that I'm not realizing how important the people were. And at Atera, I got a little bit better and a little bit more savvy with it and started to realize how literally dependent I was on the happiness of other people and investing in those people. I think to a much greater extent at Asuka, we were able to foster an environment for that. You know, the guys on that team from top to bottom, I mean, I list them all, are just insanely great people with great leadership now with Shiraz and now at Bethany, the team is excited and wants to invest and wants to work hard and wants to learn. And, you know, I started almost every one of my interviews there with, this is going to be a really hard place to work and we're going to have a great time, you know. And if you're able to get people excited about that right off the bat, you're able to, I think, set the tone for something that hopefully, because of everyone's excitement and genuine investment in it, turns out to be something that at the very least is a genuine expression of a group of people that's like-minded.
And what are some of the techniques that you use to invest in people or make people happy? And, mm-hmm. and also, why do you think it's important, specifically in our industry, to sure. do that? I think that, you know, you don't necessarily hear that in many other industries.
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. I don't have the vision to be able to look at other industries and I hope someday that I'm able to sort of unify all the theories of management and people interaction to be able to do that. But I can say with absolute certainty that people who are in the restaurant industry are looking for a way to make others happy and looking for a way to showcase their own joy and their own motivation to do so. You know, for a long time, I didn't realize how badly people craved the opportunity to actually work hard to accomplish something that was meaningful to them. And I tried to take on more than I should have or could have in a few different ways in the past. And I've realized, you know, A, that's a bad idea just from a personal happiness standpoint. But B, you know, you're taking the victories away from people, you know, that they could champion and ultimately contribute to your own success. So, I spend most of my time now empowering other people to do the things that they're passionate about, and if I can provide direction or support or empowerment to do that, then I think that, you know, we're gonna be a successful team.
Wow, it sounds like a great level of maturity and understanding and introspection, and I wish as well when we opened up Dell'Anima that I had that level of understanding. And I think that that's something that I share with you, that has been truly a growth thing over the years. You know, I think that with our restaurants, people look at them as good places to work where they are fulfilled. But it has to be also just be a conscious decision. You can't just say it, you know. It has to be a conscious decision. It has to be something that you live and you work at every single day. And you know, that's what Gabe and I say. Like, you know, how many places have you worked at where you don't look forward to going to work? And we just want to make a place where people look forward to going to work and get out of it what they want. And I think you're totally spot on with saying that the reason that people get into the restaurant industry is to show other people a good time.
Absolutely right. You know, and it was really surprising to me. I made a conscious decision to start trying to understand how I could get better at this, because I knew that what I was doing wasn't working. And, you know, reading about some of the great leaders of the world over the course of the last few you know, 100 years has, you know, revealed these patterns over time of leaders who change their ways. And you're right, you know, it's a conscious decision. You know, you read about some biographies. You read some biographies of guys like Abraham Lincoln and Benjamin Franklin, some of the founders of this nation, and the way that they started out life on you know, really, really different footing than they finished it, with varying results, obviously, for different leaders. But you know, starting things out with really, really difficult tempers and really trying personalities that cause themselves a lot of turmoil, and then making a conscious decision to not be that person anymore. And it's really inspiring. Makes me believe that someday that I could help people to become happier in whatever they do.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to you helping me to become happier at Bettany whenever it opens. But we're gonna take just a quick break. We'll be back with Eamon Rocky on In the Drink.
You're listening to Dirty Hands by Eula on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit www.surreyfarms.com. The following.
And we're back on In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm here with Eamon Rocky of the not yet open Bethany, but hopefully soon you'll be able to share Bethany with New York City. We were talking a little bit about management philosophy, and I think that's just a really interesting line of conversation, something that we haven't really covered too much on our show. Were there any influential books that really inspired you?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it goes back to, you know, the days at EMP where you start, you know, your career in the restaurant world, as an avid fan of Danny Meyer and reading Setting the Table. And before that, you know, going to school and having some amazing professors of management. So not necessarily books per se, but individuals that really exemplified the study of thought. But most recently, the one that I've gone back to more and more and more is Dale Carnegie's book, which was written, you know, almost 100 years ago and is just as relevant as ever, How to Win Friends and Influence People. The amazing thing about it is that it's just page after page of light bulb moments. It's like, mm-hmm. Oh my God, this is so simple. Why have I been so dumb for so long? You know what I mean? And none of it's new stuff. It's just a compilation of you know, simple lessons that make life much better if you embody them.
Yeah. Well, I guess this is really interesting to me because if you think about the normal trajectory of the restaurant manager, or even general manager, usually start off maybe as a teenager. You get a job as a busser or a food runner, and you work your way up eventually to a server, and then you're a server for many years, and you get hired. You know, you decide that, all right, I'm making decent money as a server, but I'm really into this. I'm going to make that big jump, and it is a big jump to be a manager. I say it's a big jump because you're when you go from a server to a manager, you're taking a pay cut intentionally to work more hours and have more responsibility.
Yep.
And then you take your first manager job and you do that and you work hard and you're good at it, and then you get promoted to assistant general manager and hopefully one day general manager. I guess that's the normal trajectory.
Sure.
But all along that way, there, you know, a lot of the people who go from server to manager were never necessarily trained as restaurant manager. I find that a lot of times, and it's even something that we did, we'd promote our top server. Mm-hmm. Someone who's great, who worked hard, who got our culture, and you know, maybe we train them for a week, maybe 2 weeks if we had a lot of luxury, you know. And now what we're doing is we're building out a management training system. But you know, maybe if we're lucky, it's 3 weeks. But,
sure.
You know, and this is a job that's running a restaurant. It's a lot of responsibility. Yeah. So for someone to succeed in this, what do you think are the keys to success? You know, you train so long to be a chef, but 3 weeks for a restaurant manager.
Sure. Well, it's really interesting, and I think that, you know, what you spoke to is the norm in restaurants in New York and beyond. You know, most GMs or most, you know, service managers, most managers in general are put in those positions because they're able to execute any position within a restaurant or within any organization because they've probably done it at some point, you know, to your story about starting as a runner and moving into a server, becoming a captain, whatever it may be, and then being a manager. But, you know, for me, the most inspiring managers are those who actually are able to identify the things they're not good at. And find people who have an active interest in being the best at whatever the manager is not good at, and the manager's job is then to empower that person so that they can excel and the tide rises as you know all the the ships rise as the tide rises in the entire organization. So that was a really poorly laid analogy, but I think you get my point. You know, as if a manager is able to assemble a group of people with compensatory skill sets that can all gel and produce something that otherwise would not be possible, then the manager has done their job. You know, I reference constantly Will Gadara at 11 Madison. You know, someone who recognizes quality and understands that overall excellence must be achieved in every nook and cranny of any organization that he's a leader of, and so he sets out to find people who are going to drive that independently of him, and because he's there to empower them. You know, whenever I was at 11 Madison, he told me once directly, he's like, listen, I want you to be on the bar team, and it's important to me that you realize that this is not about, you know, making our bar a good bar. It's about making our bar as good as any bar. And if Will's not a bartender, you know, and he doesn't have to be. I don't know that I've ever seen Will make a drink, but he recognizes quality, and he understands that what's most important is the investment in people. And if he's able to get people excited, like he was able to get me excited, then we don't stop. We don't stop until we achieve what we're out to accomplish. And it was making one of the best bars in New York, not making one of the best restaurant bars in New York, or being able to surpass our peers. It was about being able to surpass the entire collection of cocktail programs in New York with that in mind specifically.
And have you brought that idea to Bethany, that not only do you have to be really good, you got to be the best? I mean, that what a huge burden that you have to bear.
I make it through somehow. No, it's important to me that's the philosophy, because it's the one that I know, and I believe it's a fair concept and one that's noble to be able to strive to accomplish excellence in every pursuit within an organization. You know, working with great purveyors, working with talented baristas, working with talented bartenders, wine professionals, etc. So that your goal is not necessarily to you know, measure yourself by others' accomplishments, but if you're able to have fun and really enjoy the pursuit of excellence in each of these categories, then you are innately going to strive for perfection.
Yeah, well, I have to say, you know, I definitely was at 11 Madison Park when you were there. Truly one of the most memorable meals of my life. And then Atera, God, that's like just one of the greatest experiences, meal, whatever experiences. It's truly, truly memorable. I can't go to Asuka until I can choose a time to go with my girlfriend, because if I go without her, she'll kill me. But I have no doubt that great things are going to come of Bethany as well. But I can't have you on the show without asking you a little bit about this Scandinavian movement in New York right now. And I know you said you're not an expert, but you've been involved in the two of the most prominent restaurants, and you've been there. Uh-huh. And so I imagine you have unique insight as to why are we having a Scandinavian moment right now? What's going on that these places are being a little bit more? I mean, is it the same group of people who's spreading it around? It seems like this is the Scandinavian time in New York City.
Sure, you know, it's an interesting concept, and I wouldn't necessarily say that Atera is devout to Scandinavian cuisine in any way. You know, Matt has crafted his own cuisine and is one of the most talented chefs, certainly in New York, a real inspiration to work with. Certainly, Asuka is devout to Scandinavian cuisine. But the interesting thing for me is that it's more of a philosophy from my perspective. And I'm not Scandinavian. I won't ever pretend to feel like I'm a part of that culture, but more an observer and enjoyer of it. But it seems to me that the cuisine specifically of Scandinavia has lit such fire in the industry because it is a philosophy that's applicable no matter where you're at. You know, it's about sense of place. It's about seasonality. It's about a respect for and relationship with the region that you exist within and the land that the food comes from, and also application of technique. You know, it's about making it more natural, allowing the ingredients to speak for itself in all of the facets that it can express itself. So you know, you get dishes that are emulative of the earth, and you know, they don't necessarily undergo a tremendous amount of manipulation. And if there is technique applied to them, it's ultimately to showcase what's already there. Mm-hmm. That to me is why Scandinavian philosophy with regard to cuisine is so important, and why I don't think it will be a fad per se. You know, I think the hype will you know, die down a little bit as people realize that it doesn't have to be a fad. It can integrate, and we can learn these lessons from Scandinavian chefs across the world. You know, going to Favican in Ora in Sweden was one of the most amazing experiences of my life, because, again, you know, nothing there was anything but what it should have been. And I say that not to say that, you know, they were necessarily striving for perfection consciously, but, you know, they were just doing what they knew to be right, I felt. And I don't want to speak for that team there because I'm not a part of it, but, you know, it was apparent to me that they did the things they did because they knew that that would be the best expression of whatever they were doing, from the way that they you know, erected the hotel or the inn that is connected with the restaurant. You know, they did it the way that they did it because it would ultimately make people feel good, and you could walk, you know, from your room down to the dining room and walk back up whenever you're done. And the layout and the amenities there are few and far between, but perfect, you know, and make you feel exactly the way you need to feel and put you in the right frame of mind to have an amazing experience there.
And other than at the highest end of cuisine, what did you notice were some of the trends that were going on in more casual dining? Are they bringing those same philosophies to the, you know, to the restaurant where you don't have to, you know, save up all year to go to?
Are you referring, to specifically in Scandinavia?
Yeah, that's good.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, I got the impression that they're wholly, like, on board with looking to New York, and specifically Brooklyn, honestly, for inspiration. You know, it's really cool. You know, I'm here at Roberta's walking down the street on Moore Street and, you know, smelling these amazing smells of bacon and you know, coffee and pastries, and it's pretty cool. Those same streets feel like they can be a part in some ways of a lot of the more modern or more progressive streets in some parts of Scandinavia that I've been a part of. And obviously, you know, some of the buildings are much, much older and of a different style. But, you know, you see people walking around dressing much the same and eating and drinking and living in much the same way. It's interesting, the exchange, but both maintaining a lot of their own identity. So I haven't quite put my finger on it, but I feel like there's a lot of exchange and a lot of mutual respect, especially between the communities of New York and a lot of the more progressive areas of Scandinavia.
I just love that, all that exchange between Paris and Brooklyn, Scandinavia and Brooklyn, New York and the world. It's pretty exciting, and I think that not that we fully arrived as a food country, but I think that the fact that we are now exporting some of our own food traditions is pretty exciting as someone who's in the industry and who cares about food. So, Amy, when did you say the opening was for? No, just kidding. Amy and Rocky, thank you so much. Everyone, look out! I see you on Eater all the time, so I'm sure they're going to tell everyone when the opening of Bethany will be.
Hopefully, on my schedule as well as theirs.
On your schedule. And thanks everyone for listening. This has been In the Drink on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.